Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, January 23rd, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is a pretty balmy 49 degrees and pretty cloudy here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show 24/7 Biodata Tracking, Dr. Watson and Running Man. And we looked at a story out of, I think it was Gizmodo, where they had been comparing some of the things that happened in that movie, Running Man, which was a book by Stephen King back from the 80s. And then they made a movie about it with Richard Dawson as the game show host that allowed people to compete. Actually, they were criminals. People who had already been put in jail, they would allow them to compete in a life or death game to see whether or not they could get out of their sentence. And nobody ever won. I hate to tell you that. But the weirdest thing was is that, yes, you had a reality TV show with a game show host running with criminals, and it took place in 2017. We are now at this place in time where it seems like we're in bizarro world. Every time you turn around, something else is screaming bizarro world. And if this weekend's press conferences and things of that nature were any indication of the future, I'm going to say be afraid, be kind of afraid. I am not sure what to think. And I really have to admit, there's just been a lot going on here personally, with the holidays and everything and a kid. And my sister was just in town this weekend and my dad, everybody needs some attention. It's just really hard for me, but add to all the family stuff going on, this complete utter lunacy that is happening in the political realm. I feel very scrambled. I don't know if you guys feel that way or if it's just me, but my brains just feel like someone put them in a blender for 2017 and now they're in a cocktail glass somewhere. I need an ice cube. I don't know. So, guys, hopefully 2017 gets a little better and not crazier, because I don't think we need another dose of crazy. So, well, let's take a look here, because I want to try, and I'm going to promise, I've had these things queued up for over 2 months. I am going to try now today and maybe even tomorrow to get through the rest of these tabs on this page about AI. We've been talking about AI and the brain and manipulating the brain and having robot doctors. Good old Dr. Watson is taking over. We have read a lot about IBM, that Ginni Rometty, about all the things that IBM wants to do with their Watson artificial intelligence software. We read about them already being the back end of 20 oncology hospitals, and they're curing cancer, as well as back ending the VA and all kinds of other promising things in the future. Under Armour, of course, you could have your smart underwear. And we read a story 2 days ago about the athletes. They've been using, oh yeah, it was Friday actually. They've been using small devices, wearables, to track biostatistics on athletes 24/7. And they were saying, this is kind of a little ethical slippery slope here, because as you are giving up your most private data to the machine, they could tell anything about you. And it's not even pee in a cup now, Johnny. We could tell whether or not you've been doing some sort of illicit substance you weren't supposed to be just by this little Fitbit watch that's on your arm that can take samples of your sweat. I don't know if they can. I would imagine they could. And if they can't, they will be in the very near future. But the stuff that they're doing right now, they always pick little test beds. They do little tests. They do a smaller sample size than the general population. They see how things work out. When it all ends up hunky dory, well, then It's time to make bazillions of dollars, bring that price point down so there's a chicken in every pot, and people want one. Come up with a great marketing campaign and sell the crap out of it, and that's just the way of a consumeristic society. But guess what, guys? It has now been turned around. The world of Edward Bernays of convincing us to be good little consumers for the 19th and 20th centuries. Actually, I think it was the 20th century. For the 20th century, they've now turned that Bernaysian psychology around and have made us want to sell ourselves. Not going out and buy things and stay, keep up with the Joneses. Oh, no. See, they're going to use health and longevity to get you to get sucked into the machine. Who doesn't want to be healthy and beautiful and live forever? Because, you know, that always has been a draw. They have been seeking out the fountain of youth for hundreds, if not thousands of years. The quote-unquote fountain of youth. And now we have all these tech billionaires and pharmaceutical companies and senators and who the and silly actors. We're all investing in longevity medicine, this 21st century George Jetson nanorobot in your blood. Monitor you 24/7 on a little mini dashboard like a car and fix you before you get sick. I mean, that literally is what we are talking about within the next less than 20 years. They're building that infrastructure right now to make that happen. They're building the infrastructure to transform this world of nuts and bolts, this world of C, A, T, and G, those four amino acids that comprise everything on planet Earth. And they are looking to transform that to some sort of, I don't even know what to call it. I want to call it a Tower of Babel, but that only implies talking, and it's way beyond that. It is a complete confusion. It is a complete knocking off its axis, the axis of life. They want to mix and match in a petri dish DNA from every living creature and to be able to push a button. Not every, but they want to have a database and be able to mix and match and create life on the fly. Zing, push a button, DARPA lady. And they're going to make that happen. And then they're going to convince us that we're imperfect and we need to be improved. Well, look, we got this and this and this and this. We've isolated all these traits. Push a button. Get your superpower nasal spray. Your fingernails, claws or something. You know, and looking at that Insect Allies program that DARPA is working on, utilizing insects. We've talked about this a bunch of times before. We should take a look, not today, but we should take a look and see. Now that the project has been bid out and there are people actually working on it, we should get out some understanding as to who all the players are and where they've gotten. But in that Insect Allies program, they were enslaving, that's probably the best way to put it. They were enslaving insects by infecting them with genetically modified viruses. I'm sure they could even do it with bacteria. But I think viruses, as far as genetic modification of plants, viruses are typically how they do it, because a virus, we talked about how they can scan a cell, find the cracks, infiltrate that cell like a Trojan horse, and then release their payload. So viruses are very good for getting inside of cells. But they use these genetically modified viruses. They want to infect these insects. They want to set the insects free onto the growing crop that needs changing genetically. And as the insects eat the crops, their spittle mixes with the plants. And they impart that genetically modified virus in their spittle into the plant. Well, then it gets into the plant. The virus travels around, starts getting into the cells, infiltrates, breaks open, and now starts to replicate. Within one season, one growing season, that entire crop of plants will then be genetically modified by that process. And I know you're thinking, what? Bugs bit, eating the plants, can genetically modify them? Well, apparently so. Apparently that's what they're putting lots of money into, trying to figure out. So you'll never know. It'll all be done naturally by insects, by Mother Nature. That's the way they're going to do it. I mean, they don't want to label any of this stuff. So, hey, you know, right now they can CRISPR it. CRISPR that TARDIS. They CRISPR food, like the CRISPRed mushrooms. They decided they don't need to label that because they didn't insert any foreign material. All they did was manipulate the genetic material that existed. So because of that, you know, they might have flipped 22 switches, but they don't need to tell you about it on a label. Plus, I think they got rid of most of that labeling anyway. But with these insects, the Insect Allies program, look it up, A-L-L-I-E-S. I don't think they're going to be planning on labeling any of that either. You know, we talked a long time ago about the genetically modified moths that were released in New York State. Right near an organic cabbage farm, except nobody told the cabbage farmer. And those diamondback moths, they were from Oxitec. Good old Oxitec that spun out of Oxford University and created all the genetically modified mosquitoes. Yes, same Oxitec. They created those genetically modified moths in good old Cuomo, New York governor. Gave the approval for them to allow these moths in the wild in New York, except they didn't tell anyone. They didn't do an environmental impact study, and they let them go. And then they ended up somehow near, and I don't know if they found them in, an organic cabbage farm. You know, they love cabbage. Moths love cabbage. They lay their eggs and eat it and whatever. You know, so now they've just ruined. So think about this. This is, I'm totally off topic now, and I don't even have anything prepared to talk about what I'm talking about at this moment, but that's okay. Because here's the thing. When we start looking at, I guess we're going to look at bastardization today of society and our the world that we live in right now. It's going to be, I mean, we already are looking at a bizarre world. Like I said, this weekend, just watching TV, I was at my parents' house visiting. My sister was in town, I told her. And my dad has the news on Fox News all weekend, so I couldn't help but hear it. But, yeah, I was watching that press conference. He's coming out, like, trying to straighten up rumors the other guys are spreading. And I just thought to myself, how weird is that? Like, most White Houses would never deal with name calling, or I think this was about, you know, CNN said the crowds were small, and he's saying no, they weren't, they were big. I honestly had been thinking to myself, like, when all the dust cleared, and I was like, well, thank God Hillary Clinton isn't president. How bad, you know? Then you ask yourself, how bad could it be? Don't ever ask yourself that question, because I have a really bad feeling that, like, if this is any indication as to what the future is going to look like, I don't even know what to say. You literally would go on TV and start picking a fight with some other media agency saying, you know, it was much bigger than you said it was. I don't know. It just seems so babyish, so childish. And the scary part is, these are the people now holding the reins. These are the people who are in charge of this insanity that we talk about on this show every day. These are the people who are funding the scientists, who are coming up with ways to read our brains and do neuromodulation, be able to suck our thoughts out of our head, and make all the laws to boot. I mean, I think it's just, guys, I don't want to like get into some sort of freak out mode here, but I think it's just all starting to hit me in waves, like how bad this could potentially be. And not that I'm saying, I mean, Trump at least stirred up the system. I have to give him that. He did something that nobody really has been able to do. He got a lot of attention. But I'm really not so sure that, you know, even though we might agree on some things, we most certainly don't agree on everything. And I'm not really sure how much we actually agree on, because everything changes every other day out of his mouth. But I'm just frightened when I think about day number two or three in the White House. You have a press conference scolding a news agency. You know, they framed the picture so it didn't look like there were a lot of people at the inauguration or something. Who cares? Who cares? It's like your nose is funny, Johnny. I mean, who cares? Johnny's funny nose doesn't affect anything else, or my life, or my day. And you know what? Johnny's funny nose doesn't affect Johnny either, because he doesn't even pay attention to it unless he's looking in a mirror. But you know what I mean? Like, I just can't even get over how strange the world has gotten. So let's tie it all together and move on, because I've spent 20 minutes talking about this. The world has become a very strange place, and every day it seems that we take another step forward into bizarro world. So here we are in 2017. It is 3 weeks in. It is 2 days after the inauguration, and we are now standing at the precipice of the next 4, potentially 8 years of our lives. How's that going to affect us? I really think people need to be paying attention to the stuff that we talk about on this show every day, because remember, this is where Motley Fool said that all the money can be made over the next just 3 years by 2020. Bazillions of dollars in biotech. We saw right after the election, we looked at biotech stocks to try to determine what that meant for all the stuff we talk about. And guess what? Oh, they were going through the roof. We know Trump is a businessman. He has lots and lots and lots of business partners. He's making lots more. And as long as everybody makes money, nobody's going to complain, and they're all going to praise him. This is about making money, guys. We put a billionaire into office. Billionaires do but one thing, unless, of course, they inherited it all. But billionaires, billionaire businessmen, do but one thing, and that is try to make money. That money, the dangling carrot, is their dopamine dose. That's what motivates them. I was on that dangling carrot treadmill for a very long time, chasing after that paycheck. And then, you know, as you started to get better jobs and make more money, then you'd be chasing after the paycheck more. And then when you got a job that you had salary plus commission, oh God, a commission job could get you to work 20 hours a day. You know, the more you sell, and I wasn't selling, I was doing engineering, but still, the salespeople that I was engineering for were selling it. So if I had a good design and I beat out all my competitors as to what my suggestions were, and, you know, you'd have to write up a scope of work, what you saw, you had to do your walkthrough and see exactly what they need to upgrade or whatever, connect. You know, if I came up with a better design than my 10 competitors out there with a better price, or at least, you know, did something like gave them a phased transition. Tell you what, that's what won me all the time. Anybody out there doing engineering, don't give them the big fat bill all at once. What you do is you do a phased approach. You find out when their budget dollars meetings happen and when they have approval to pass things, because you have conversations with the CFO, the IT director, etc. And then you work within their monetary confines. You say, okay, you got $100,000 this year. Well, let's do the most important piece of that. Let's do the phased approach downstairs for all the kids. Get everything upgraded. Next year, when you get your next $100,000, we'll do the upgrade for all the administrators or vice versa. But they like that because you had a plan. It wasn't just somebody throwing numbers at them with some cookie cutter proposal that really wasn't individualized. You individualized it and you thought about them. You had concern for them. You wanted to help them be better as an organization, and that won them over. Well, guys, this psychological game that they are playing with us right now to get us to step up and to become a part of this new medical miracle that they are calling 21st century cures is all about pushing those psychological buttons to make you think that they care about you and that they want to keep you healthy and they want to keep you safe. And all you got to do is what they tell you to do. You got to be a part of this plan. You got to be a part of this program. You got to sign up for this and you got to get this injection. And if you do all that, you are going to be better for it because we said so. And guys, I mean, if you trusted, now the difference was I was what you considered a quote unquote trusted advisor. Okay. I worked for a company and companies contracted us. They called us. They found us. They'd done business with us before. You know, they found a company, a team, a salesperson, an engineer that they could have good conversations with. We actually, you know, it's one thing I always told you about on the federal side of things. You know, one of the big tricks to get in a job is to take them out and go to Vegas. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But, you know, we used to wine and dine some of our accounts as well, especially when they were good accounts. Especially when it had been multi-year projects we'd been working on, especially when we got to know the people. You know, I made lots of friends back in those days. And it's amazing what a delicious cheeseburger and a beer can sell. But, you know, now it's not the delicious cheeseburger and a beer. It's the dangling carrot of money. So we have the changing of the guards. We have Trump in the White House. We have the ball that had started to roll down the road. And where is that going to leave us? Well, like I said, we've been looking now at all this neurological surveillance and all these little nanobot tools and zippity-zapping. Dr. Watson, AI everywhere, biosensors, bio-tracking, molecular scanners. I mean, need I go on? And the wonders of technology that they've groomed us to just open our arms and accept. You know, it's that dangling carrot of email, and our devices themselves push that dopamine button to want you, to make you want more. We found out the other day, we read a story out of Singularity Hub. 1/3 of Americans would prefer a software robot over a human boss. This is a study out of Oxford University from actually 2013 that estimated up to 47% of American jobs may be automated by 2035. And a brand new study out of McKinsey showed that actually it could be 45% not only of our jobs, but our activities. And the big push now is if you can digitize, you should. So they've already worked on the people. The people are ready to hand it over. You got companies such as IBM with their IBM Watson that are really making a big play with artificial intelligence. Watson, we read about artificial intelligence a lot, but one of the things we were talking about the other day was narrow AI versus general AI. And they've all been saying narrow AI is quite easy. Not really, but easier. Because narrow AI focuses on one topic, one subject. That's all it does. It's like building a, I don't know, a trowel. All you can do with that trowel is dig versus having a Swiss Army knife deluxe that has all the tools on it. It's still a little tool that you can pack in your backpack, but one can do tons of things and one can do just one thing really well. Well, Watson, I think, in the end, is supposed to be a general artificial intelligence, but what they're doing is they are splitting up Watson's skills right now into different silos. So we have healthcare Watson, who's working on curing cancer all over the place. But we also have business Watson and biostats Watson, if they're going to start putting them into wearables and then tie that into the healthcare unit. And that would be like general healthcare versus specific cancer healthcare. We found out Watson was also working on genomics. We had found out that a couple months ago. He was learning to read also scans from CAT scans and fMRIs, mammograms to identify tumors. And Watson is getting very powerful. And don't forget, Watson also can win a game of Jeopardy. And every time they talk about Watson in one of these stories, they always have to invoke Jeopardy. But I want to warn you, Watson now is starting to spread out other places. Now, Ginni Rometty, CEO of IBM, has been all over the place. She's been at the CES conference. She was at the, I wouldn't be surprised if she wasn't just at Davos. I don't remember what the other conference was. Maybe it was Davos. Hold on. Wait, I got the video up right here. Let me just look. Yes, it was Davos. She is, and this is from 2017, 4 days ago. She's sitting on stage at Davos talking about AI. And if you read anything about what they've been talking about there, it's all the stuff that we talk about on the show and how they are going to be the economic engines for the 21st century. I mean, they're all in on it, all of them. All the rich billionaires, all the business owners, all the pharmaceutical companies, even tech companies, governments, they're in on it. This is the new ship. This is where they're steering it. But what got me, I couldn't even believe this one. So, all right, healthcare is one thing. Smart underwear is another. Playing Jeopardy is a third. But now we have Sears. Sears, who is closing thousands of stores, right? Sears merged with Kmart. They bought up Kmart. Now they're not doing too well. They're really hurting. Well, what are they saying? What do we find out? If you can automate or digitize, you should, because it's going to give you the competitive advantage, right? So we talked about this the other day, too. You got all these overseas pressures and globalization all coming into play here. We're a very small world now. We're all connected. I could be working for a place in, you know, Tanzania, if I could speak their language. I don't know, do they speak English in Tanzania? Just if Tanzania had the internet. You know, we got Facebook and Google. There's Skybenders and whatever drones to beam 5G internet all over the globe 24/7 ubiquitously to all those poor people in the continent of Africa that aren't connected yet. Once they get that all set, and that's coming, remember, that's going to be the spider web that connects the internet of everything, of which we are going to become a part with this new 21st century medicine. As they connect all these things, it will be democratized across the globe. So anybody and everyone will be able to utilize some of these new tools. Now, Ginni Rometty told us that we better pay attention because within the next few years, Watson is going to be involved in all of our lives. every day. You might not even know it. He might be in the back end. But Watson is going to be there. And we sang the song, "He Knows When You Are Sleeping." It's just so frightening to me. And somebody will be watching, probably the big pulsating AI, boom, boom, quantum computer in some underground cave that can never be accessed. It's beyond frightening. So anyway, all right, let's stop being crazy, Joel. Sears, ding, ding, ding. Sears is now using IBM Watson to bring artificial intelligence to what? Oh, tire shopping. Yes. You know, next time you got to go to Sears to get a new set of tires. Don't worry. IBM Watson is going to have your back. I couldn't even believe this. So maybe that's where Sears figures out they're going to make their money. Soon we're going to have Watson Atlas changing tires. Sears, this is from January 18, 2017. Sears wants to use artificial intelligence to help you shop for your next tire. Sears Auto Center announced the pilot launch of its digital tire journey, they are calling it, a web app that uses IBM Watson natural language classifier service to help customers find the best tires that fit their needs. Hoffman Estates-based Sears says that beyond a vehicle's make and model, customers need tires that are built for their everyday routines. Yes, personalization. Everything now is going to be personalized. That's how they're going to suck you in. They're going to take that need that they've groomed into us, that narcissistic need that they've groomed into society, utilizing Bernaysian techniques, consumerism. Think about me, me, me. They're going to utilize that vulnerability that they have now caused in all of us to make us get sucked into this. They, precision medicine itself is all about individualized care. It's going to be putting you at the center of attention, and all of us are going to get our own personalized assistance. That back end to this massive store of knowledge to become our best friend. It's my best friend. And our trusted advisor. For all of you people out there who just need a little bit of help, 24/7, anytime. You know, they're even going to have chatbots. So when you're lonely, I think they were using them in Japan already as a beta. And they went over huge. When you were lonely, it was kind of like a Taybot, except it was better. It didn't go all Nazi, Nazi sex bots. But, you know, they have these new AI chatbots that you could have a full conversation with, and it'll ask you questions and answer for people who just really need some companionship. I mean, guys, they are tinkering with so many things right now, and they are manipulating these little psychological buttons that most of us don't even realize. It's been a slow process. They've been grooming us for a long time through consumerism. And now, you know, we have conveniences. We are allowing AI to be democratized across the board. Remember, we talked about all the big boys, the IBMs, the Microsofts, the Googles. They all now made their APIs, their application programming interfaces, to their AI creation open source. So now they don't have any licensing fees. You want to build an application that back ends to Microsoft's artificial intelligence. Well, here you go, George. Start programming away. We would love for you to build your program that used our back end brain. You know, once you program that in, you start utilizing their tool that's free, living in the cloud. You start feeding it data. Remember, I told you, it's all about the data that we are feeding the machine. The machine gets smarter and smarter every day because they are learning about us, every facet of humanity. and how our minds work and how our bodies work and how, you know, as these things get smarter and smarter, and we already found out that Google's AI has been able to teach itself a couple times now without any human intervention whatsoever. Danger, Will Robinson. That's all I can say. You know, we are all running after this dangling carrot because it's going to make a bazillion dollars. Not we as in us. I'm talking we as in humanity. And like making bazillion dollars is the only important thing. I mean, come on. They are selling humanity right now. All of humanity for sale. And not only humanity, nature, the planet, everything, life. It's all up for sale. Now, how do we get there from IBM Watson bringing artificial intelligence to tire shopping? Well, not really sure yet. We'll get there. But it's infiltrating every facet of our lives. And it's happening without you even knowing it. Now, if you went tire shopping and never heard my show, would you know that you were having a one-on-one with IBM Watson? Probably not. Anyway, let's finish the story, and then we'll continue on. We'll get into some brain stuff. So rather than using a drop-down menu with available sections like we all are used to with our online shopping, Sears Digital Tire Journey, which is like, it's making me think of that never-ending story. I don't know why. Sears Digital Tire Journey provides tire recommendations based on customers' answers to certain questions. The program asks questions like, quote, when it comes to tires, what is most important to you? If someone responds with an answer like, I am concerned about driving my kids safely, Sears then recommends a tire with a higher safety rating, the company said. And, you know, like I was saying, when you're an engineer, for example, you go in as a trusted advisor because you have a customer who has pain points. They need a solution to their problem. And what's the first thing that I would do as an engineer? Well, I would ask questions, and probably this very question. What is most important to you? Do they want speed? Do they want price? Do they need privacy or some sort of encryption because of a new law like HIPAA? And that's where you always start your sales. So, you know, how freaky is that? IBM Watson has figured that out. I don't know. They programmed it into them. But they're now going to make Watson a trusted advisor using his natural language processing capabilities. Help make you feel good. Help pinpoint what you are looking for. It is one more baby step forward to gaining your trust. That trust that they need so bad for us to embrace artificial intelligence. See, the problem right now is that they have these resistant consumers out there like you and me who are going, I'm not so sure about that, Clyde. I don't know if I want to be in a self-driving car that's deciding where I go or getting nanobots in my blood or scanning me 24/7, facial recognition to determine my emotions and bouncing Wi-Fi off my chest. Not so sure. But see, we're the problem, people. Because the people who aren't paying attention don't even know what's going on. And they can then put it in a pretty package like, hey, tire shopping that caters to all your needs. What about smart homes? You walk in and bzing, oh, your lighting and your music is all exactly the way you want it. It is instant gratification. They've groomed us to love instant gratification in the last 40 years. You know, back in the 70s, you broke your toy. Well, Johnny, I hate to tell you, you're not getting another one. You want to watch cartoons? Well, you got to wait till Saturday morning, and then you only have cartoons on one channel. You know, compare that to the world today, two or three generations. Probably two, last 40 years. You can get anything 24/7, anywhere, at any holiday, anywhere. Just depends. You know, I mean, if you're living in Podunk, maybe not. But do you still, as long as you have ubiquitous internet, you can go to Amazon.com and go order yourself something to be shipped with your Amazon Prime and get it in 2 days. It's just the way the world is. Now we're getting ready to groom Africa and bring them on board as well. But they are going to utilize these psychological processes that they've groomed us to now expect and drive this agenda of accepting our AI robot rulers for some point in the future. And we're going to try to get there today because that's what this whole show is going to be about. All right, well, let's finish listening about IBM's tire shopping Watson. So they ask you questions like a trusted advisor and then try to come up with suggestions based upon your concerns to gain your trust and hopefully win your sale. Hey, maybe this will put Sears back in the black. Says Sears uses Watson's natural language classifier to understand the driving style of the customer and then recommends the tires that are a good match. Our vision is to put our members' lives in drive, and we do that by investing in people, products, and technologies to keep them moving safely on the road of life. Well, isn't that a nice elevator pitch there, Brian Kaner, president of Sears Auto Center? The digital tire journey is an innovative service that helps customers cut through the clutter while integrating digital, mobile, and online with in-store shopping. The innovative features come amidst a trying time for the once prominent retail chain. Yeah, it's sad. I mean, Sears is one of the original retailers here in the United States, is it not? Didn't they have like one of the very first catalogs, the old school catalogs? So it is sad. You don't want to see anybody go under. They've been around. They have been a cornerstone company in this country, I'm sure, for over 100 years. I know they are. And Sears Craftsman has always been a favorite of anybody who is into tools. My dad included. He loves his Craftsman. Because they replace them if they break them. Though I heard they're not doing that now because of, I don't know. So we'll see. But anyway, Sears announced earlier this month that it would close 150 stores by the end of March. In September, analysts at Moody estimated that Sears' negative cash flow for 2016 would be $1.5 billion. Oh, ouch. $1.5 billion negative outflow. And the company had just $258 million in cash on hand with $3.1 billion with a B in long-term debt, according to the New York Times. The company also, oh my God, so I guess it's true. The company unloaded its Craftsman tool brand in January, ding, so this month, and they sold it to Stanley Black & Decker for $900 million. So guys, I'll have to tell my dad that one. So Craftsman got sold. So there you go. I mean, an American staple such as Sears, a cornerstone to a company that has been here for generations, is about ready to go under. They're in some dire straits. But if you can digitize, do it. So IBM stepped right in. They're going to lend a hand now to Sears. If it all works out well, guess what? Sears is going to become a new poster boy for IBM Watson to start selling this even deeper into society. Out of CIO Magazine, this is right at the very end of the year, 2017 will be a big year for AI thanks to tech giants. Technology's leading companies drove the evolution of artificial intelligence in 2016. And we've talked about that many, many times. I mean, back at the beginning of 2016, remember the big story, our big concern in January of last year was about AI and self-driving cars and the ethics of the car to make the decision as to whether or not you live or die in the case of an emergency. If you are careening out of control, the car is going to have to make a decision. Does it swerve right and plow you into a sidewalk full of pedestrians, potentially killing 20 or 30 people? Or does it swerve you to the left, slamming you into the brick wall that will probably kill you, but save those 20 or 30 people? And much to our surprise, we found out that they have programmed the self-driving cars to kill the driver. Ding. I don't know if people knew that. I don't know if most people realize that, but that is what they've done. This is an ethical conundrum. But they want to keep the number of people potentially injured, because that's what AI does. It looks statistically at things and comes up with calculations. And it statistically says that it is better to kill less people in an accident, and ergo, if it's only the driver, let's do that one. But that was the ethical issues we were dealing with in January of 2016, and now we are talking about experimentation on humans and nanobots to deliver chemotherapy payloads, zippity-zapping the brain, utilizing AI to diagnose our mental health, and we're going to get there, I promise. Machine learning and other variations of artificial intelligence are expected to proliferate in the enterprise in 2017. The majority of IT players, including today's leading technology companies, have invested in the space and plan to increase efforts for the foreseeable future. However, while machine learning has generated tremendous interest throughout the enterprise, a wide gap still exists between research and beneficial use cases in the real world. Well, hey, look, we know now it can sell tires. We're going to find out it can diagnose mental disease. We know that it can help track your biostatistics and put it in a dashboard and tell you whether or not you are operating within parameters. And there are only a small number of companies right now that have the resources to actually drive AI innovation and deliver it to the masses. Right, that's in January of 2017. Wait until the end of the year, guys. Mark my words, we're talking about just the dawn of this right now, just the beginning of AI being launched into the wild and learning different narrow verticals. But soon, it's going to be everywhere. They've made all this stuff open source. And now you just need all your developers who are out there, your programmers, to get up to speed with these different application programming interfaces. I'm going to tell you, by December, I would almost bet you it's going to be all balls out. We're going to see AI in every pot by then. All right. I don't know. This story's kind of long, and I really, really want to get onto this brain stuff. So there's a story that came out of Scientific American January 1st, 2017. Let's set the stage right for the new year. Is mental health declining in the U.S.? Well, I'm going to tell you that yes, it is, and yes, for a lot of reasons, many, many reasons. And it's not just in the U.S., it's across the globe. You know, we have looked at stress and fear and things that they do to the body, some of the chemicals that they cause the brain to produce. They are able to condition us with that fear button. We were looking at little mousies doing mazes and pushing buttons, and they are able to condition mice with this fear memory that then they can replicate over and over again. It resides in that amblygata. I think I said it right this time. Gadala. That's where the fear button, the emotion, they can hijack your brain and go direct to the fear button. Our mental health, I'm going to say, is declining in this country and across the globe because of the things that they've done to us, because of the way we've been traumatized, because of the way that we are separated and segregated and manipulated. Terrorism, of course, is a very big one, and allow them to then tell you they have to keep you safe because you are afraid, so very afraid. It's also our food and the pesticides that, of course, we know kills our gut bacteria that affects our production of proper brain chemicals. It becomes this downward spiral. But hey, don't worry about it. We give half of Americans SSRIs or some sort of antidepressant medication that then tinker with their brain chemistries. We have good old Tommy Insel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health. Go to Google. And we read all about that. He is working on applications for the smartphone to be able to diagnose your mental disease. Well, now the 21st Century Cures Act has been passed right at the end of December, just days before the story about mental health declining in the U.S. was written. And there's an entire mental health component to that 21st Century Cures Act to be able to neurologically surveil and monitor and track and get a dashboard, bag and tag, and dump more research money, bazillions of dollars, into cracking the secrets of the brain. They also have the Brain Initiative going on. And soon, guys, there will be no secrets at all. They can suck out our thoughts. They already can read our dreams. There is a story that then came out January 3rd. Oh, looky, looky. Because remember, another part of precision medicine is getting that DNA swab, sequencing you, and giving you precision medicine. All completely tailored to your genetic makeup. They can find out exactly what issues you could potentially have. And then they can, quote unquote, cure you because you've been deemed defective. Well, guess what? Genes that affect our communication skills, they have found, relate to genes for psychiatric disorders. Oh. Go to 23andMe. I saw commercials all weekend, by the way. 23andMe. Get your DNA swab. Find out if you're related to the Queen of England. I actually saw that. You know, I joked about that. See if you're related to royalty. Give us your DNA swab. Well, now that's one of these sales pitches for DNA swabs I saw was actually find out if you're related to royalty. Anyway, by screening thousands of individuals, and remember they're working on that All of Us database here in the United States. That is a collaboration between the National Institute of Health, National Science Foundation, and 23andMe, your doctor's office, just about everybody and anyone. Check that box. Give it up for the good of humanity. Give up all your data so we can experiment, collaborate, collate, database, and then set the AI onto your data as a whole to find patterns so we can crack more secrets, find those Achilles heels and your weaknesses that we can then exploit. By screening thousands of individuals, an international team led by researchers of the Max Planck Institute for Psycholinguistics, the University of Bristol, and the Broad Institute, which is our favorite, of biologically inspired engineering at Harvard, as well as the iPsych Consortium, has provided new insight into the relationship between genes and the risk for autism or schizophrenia, as well as the genes that influence our ability to communicate during the course of development. Researchers studied the genetic overlap between the risk of having these psychiatric disorders and measures of social communicative competence, that is, the ability to engage socially with other people successfully during middle childhood to adolescence, and they showed the genes influencing social communication problems during childhood also overlap with genes conferring risk for autism, but that this relationship wanes during adolescence. In contrast, genes influencing risk for schizophrenia were most strongly interrelated with genes affecting social competence during later adolescence, So if you had problems when you get a little older making friends versus younger, it might be schizophrenia, not autism. But these findings suggest that the risk of developing these contrasting psychiatric conditions is strongly related to distinct sets of genes, which, by the way, with CRISPR, we can just flip a few switches there, Johnny, and fix you right up. Both of which influence your social communication skills, but which exert their maximum influence during different periods of human development. So, guys, we've talked about the scariness of them being able to look at your genes way in the beginning of birth and determine whether or not you're defective, whether or not they have to fix you or just abort you because you are not what they are looking for. And if we're going to live forever with this longevity medicine, only perfect specimens can be born. All right, last but not least, IBM Watson has a new place that it's going to be spending its time. AI through IBM Watson is going to allow our words to be a window into our mental health. Now, remember, I had talked about Tommy Insel wanting to be able to use your voice patterns on your smartphone to determine whether or not you have some sort of psychological disease on a spectrum, which we all do. They say, check out that DSM. And give us some sort of chart that shows how much to one end or the other in that spectrum you are mentally defective. Well, good old IBM's Watson's going to help them out. In 5 years, what we say and what we write will be used as indicators of our mental health and our physical well-being. Thanks to IBM Watson. Put on a seatbelt, people, because here it comes. All right. Well, if you can even believe it, it is end of the show. Everybody, make sure you stick around because it's Monday. Lonnie Clark is live up next. Have an awesome Monday, guys. And I will catch up with you tomorrow.